that I'm there.
But this, it's not a crime, it's just you can't own a gun, and then how much, what's the enforcement on it? There probably isn't any. Is there? Does anybody know what the enforcement is on it? Under the federal law?
I believe it's up to 10 years and $10,000.
Madam Chair?
And this is just a felony, it's if you're making...
We need to have you on the right, we need to have your name.
Madam Chair, John Nichols, Oregon State Rifle and Pistol Association. Under federal law, one doesn't even have to have been convicted of a, really convicted of a felony. It's if you have been convicted of a crime for which the judge could have sentenced you to more than 1 year in the penitentiary.
Madam Chair, that by definition in the state of Oregon is a felony.
That is a felony. So you have to commit, you would have had to commit a felony by
presumably,
definition
yes,
state
but
law. Well, not presumably, but okay. Actually.
Okay, I agree.
And if you're
go ahead, Mr.
And if you're convicted for a felony in, under federal law, you're barred forever from owning a weapon?
Unless you receive an expungement, I believe a presidential pardon or appeal to the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms for a relief from disabilities. In which case, if you get a relief from disabilities, you have to furnish a copy of that letter to the gun dealer, and he attaches it to the back of the federal registration form.
Okay, go ahead, Jack.
Okay, so just to recap, getting back to it, the main policy decision here is whether you want to include the crime of possession of marijuana. A sub-issue of that, let's assume that, for the purposes of argument, that you do make a decision that you want to include marijuana as subjecting someone to the ex-con and possession laws. There's a sub-issue, and that is whether you want to include the pre-1973 folks who got felony treatment regardless of the amount, including those folks who under present law would only be subject to a violation. So I'll just toss that out. The next change that we've made, we're still in section 4, we're on the top of page 17. You'll see the language on lines 6 through 8. Basically, this says the ex-felon or ex-con in possession law doesn't apply if you've been granted relief under this act or under the federal disability removal provisions. We added in the language on lines 7 and 8 to make it clear that if you have your record expunged, which is something distinct from removing firearms disabilities, if you have your record expunged, you're also okay under the firearms. Now that, from talking to some of these folks with the intent of the bill, it's also implied, but we thought it was important to make it clear. Moving on, ex-felon in possession of a firearm is a C-felony. Felon in possession of a restricted weapon, which is switchblades and those kinds of things, is a misdemeanor. Section 5 is the section that we heard testimony on that has to do with the Health Division establishing a registry of persons reported under Senate Bill 412, which we've heard this time, this session. The change that we made is down on lines 18 and 19. The bill provided that the person would remain on the list for 6 years. We viewed this as a measure that is to provide protection to the public when in acute crises. And in keeping with that, and in keeping that we extended or expanded, made these folks subject to an inability to purchase firearms, we reduced it being on the list to 1 year.
I mentioned the additional change regarding tightening up the non-disclosure requirements.
Yeah, well, Senator. That brings us to the top of page 18. The next change that we made is that, as the Senator said, we tightened up the non-disclosure requirements. So it reads now, the reports are confidential and shall not be disclosed, but shall be used by the agency only to determine the qualifications to purchase firearms. Section 7, I noticed there's...
Excuse me, can I ask, are the folks who expressed a concern about Section 5, do these changes satisfy them?
Come on up, John. I would assume not, but...
I don't believe they do, and I do have an amendment from these folks that I'll pass out. That's appropriate at this time.
Madam Chair, John McCulley, representing Oregon Psychiatric Association. We appreciate what the drafters of this amendment have done. Definitely is better than it was when it came to you. We still have the central issue of the actual creation of a registry based on the very subjective data that would be the result of Senate Bill 412 and the reports that are made under that bill. That is still a central concern of ours. And we would therefore continue to support the elimination of Section 5 from the bill.
Okay, moving on. Section 8 is the section that has to do with the issuance of concealed weapons permits. In this section,
this is Section 6, deleted by amendment. I'm lost on that.
Pardon me?
Did we delete Section 6?
Senator, we deleted the term any misdemeanor involving violence.
But somehow the whole section got
in started. Section 6.
Oh, I see. Then that's that was the only amendment. You're
that
right.
was the
You're
only
right.
amendment.
Right.
So Section 6 was therefore
right.
deleted. All right. Again, Section 8, it has to do with issuances of these things.
Okay, we did. Okay, what have we done? What have you ended up doing with misdemeanors, if anything?
We, in the changes that we have, we've deleted them. There's been an alternative suggestion that we go back to misdemeanors of violence and specifically list those crimes that the committee feels are misdemeanors of violence. And we can discuss that option now if the chair would like.
Well, what's the committee's interest?
Perhaps it'd be helpful if Jack told us what those misdemeanors are.
Misdemeanors of violence, and this is obviously subjective, I exercise my own judgment. Misdemeanors of violence I've listed are assault in the fourth degree, assaulting a police officer, which is the same as assault in the fourth degree, except of course it's on a police officer. Menacing, which involves threatening serious physical injury. Recklessly endangering, which causes a risk of serious physical injury to a person through reckless conduct. And certain subsections of it, the intimidation statute, which have to do with racial intimidation, which involves the threat of bodily violence. In making those choices, the one policy decision that I made when compiling the list that, of course, the committee is free to reconsider is I excluded any property damage crimes because, in my mind, they're simply not crimes of violence by any stretch of the imagination.
Jack, what is assault for?
It's in the book.
A person commits a crime of assault in the fourth degree if the person intentionally, knowingly, or recklessly causes physical injury to another or with criminal negligence causes physical injury by means of a deadly weapon.
Could you beat somebody up?
Yes. Can include a range of conduct from a fairly serious beating in a domestic situation to a simple poke in a...
Well, folks, can I get your reading on this one? Does anybody care? I mean, I think sooner or later we're going to have to kind of try to get this thing in some shape so we can, you know, oblige it, try to make some effort. I know that there are people who don't want it to be Corey, you want to come on up on this one? Do you have any feedback on this piece?
Madam Chair, Corey McGregor, Speaker's Office. It was very important to the Speaker, since, especially in light of dropping the alcohol and the drug prohibitions, that we still include something for a person who's exhibited irresponsible and especially violent behavior. And an ambiguous definition, we can understand those problems, and a list would be really okay. Something she would like.
So I guess what you're saying is Vera wants misdemeanors in, and she wants some, which obviously the misdemeanor involving violence are, you know, that's a matter of interpretation that we need to deal with. But
can I see that list? Let me copy that list. Yeah, Madam Chair, in a list that we went over, House Counsel.
Can I answer Senator Hill's question? This list, probably one of the primary applications is the disability for purposes of the illegal possession statutes. So if we include these misdemeanors, you're broadening the category of people that are subject to the firearms disability and potential criminal prosecution if they do in fact have a firearm.
I tell you, I looked at your list, and what's left off there that you want to put? You think you want to put on?
My question is resisting arrest.
Would you give me the site, please?
162.315.
Okay, but I know college kids. So there are on occasion college kids who get disorderly and are oftentimes charged with resisting arrest.
If I can explain why I left that off.
Okay.
Person commits the crime of resisting arrest if the person intentionally resists a person known to be a police officer making arrest. Resist, as used in this section, means the use or threatened use of violence, physical force, or other means that create a substantial risk of physical injury. My thinking was that if it were the use of violence standing alone, that should be included, but it also includes the simple use of physical force. And quite frankly, I have to tell the committee that I guess my bias played a role to some degree in this decision, because I've seen a lot of resist arrest cases. And oftentimes they fall far short of what one would ordinarily think of as the common sense use of the word of physical violence.
Comments?
Madam Chair, if we're going to have them in, I guess this is a good list. I mean, that's about the best I could. I mean, I'm not sure whether I would want them in. The Speaker wants them, and I understand that. And I would say that if we're going to have misdemeanors in, I think that the list that's prepared is a good.
Yeah, I'm comfortable with that. I think unless we feel pretty strongly. But.
Okay.
I suppose we're going to want to do more thinking about the prohibition against possession, sort of the lifetime prohibition against possession of all firearms reaching clear down. Maybe that's something that we're going to need.
As it was written in the bill, Senator, if it was a misdemeanor involving violence, I think there was a 4-year limitation on the disability. Of course, you would still be subject to the criminal penalties if during that 4 years you would.
Well, as you rewrote it, now what is it? What's the length of it?
Well, we took it out, so it's not addressed. If the committee decided to reinsert misdemeanors of violence, I would suspect you may want to reinsert it as it was with the four-year limitation.
So it's out now?
It's out now, that's correct. In the draft that we have.
Okay.
And maybe we would want to provide a lesser period for some of the lesser felonies as well.
That gets pretty complicated.
That would be changing existing law, Senator.
Okay, we don't want to do that.
Well, except we are, I'm not posing this as a possibility, we are changing existing law since we extended to all firearms. So the question that arises, do you want to extend it to all firearms? I think that's a legitimate.
Just to comment on that, if it's appropriate.
It's appropriate for the informal work session here.
The wisdom of extending the ex-con possession statutes to all felonies, especially in light of the relatively recent decision to raise driving while suspended to the felony level has been the subject of a lot of debate.
So you have driving while suspended, who all of the driving while suspended would now be prohibited from having a
felony driving while suspended.
Unless you go to court and have the court declare that you're not a danger to yourself or others.
Okay. We've got to move on, folks.
Yep.
Just not dealing, you know, let's just figure out where we are with this.
Well, if what we're trying to do is to protect society from proper use of firearms, it doesn't make a lot of sense to prohibit possession of firearms to people whose violations did not involve physical threat to society. Logical. It's sort of a vengeance. That's not what we should be about. We're here, this is for protection, this is not for vengeance. So it's perhaps difficult to sort these crimes out. If we're going to do this, I think maybe it deserves to be thought through and judgments according to the particular crimes.
I'd agree, Madam Chair. Especially when you're talking about extending it to all firearms. I mean, I just don't see it.
Okay, what does that mean? What would your preference be then? Should we go?
Not to have felony and not to have misdemeanors really in at all.
Okay,
let me we work in at two levels here. I mean, I know that a lot of work went into putting this bill together, that some compromises were reached, and I don't particularly want to hold this bill up in some ways. I mean, I have to tell you the things that we've gone over since in the short time that I've been here, I'm not really comfortable with any of it. Because I do see the right to bear arms, especially if you can take handguns and also set them some aside. But I think people have a right to at least have some type of a weapon around to hunt and to defend their property and their homes. And I haven't seen anything here yet, but I'm trying to cooperate in putting this bill together to keep it somewhere in near the shape of the way that it came to us, because that's I feel some commitment to the speaker. I'll just be honest to try to do something to move this along. And I say I'm at least committed to trying to get this bill to the floor. But beyond that, so that's how I'm trying to work at this bill.
Then probably, I suppose, well.
Madam Chair, Senator Hill, if I remember correct from the last few meetings, the reason people were opposed to misdemeanors was misdemeanors are misdemeanors. As a society, we've said they're not felonies. Felonies are more serious. They have higher penalties. They carry tougher punishment. As if you do commit a felony, there are punishments at the federal level, as in you forfeit your right to keep and bear arms. I can understand your apprehension, but I would say there is a correlation between committing a felony and acting irresponsible. And if you think that some felonies, like driving while suspended, is not that serious, then my question would be, why is it a felony?
We might have a philosophical difference, because what I'm saying is that there's a difference to me in my mind. The Constitution says people have a right to bear arms, all right? So in order to take that right away from them, I think that there has to be a good reason. Now, if someone has committed even a felony that is not a violent felony, or a person has not exhibited violence, that to me is still not a reason to say that they cannot possess. Again, you can say they don't possess a concealable weapon since they've committed a crime. That's one thing. I'm not even sure you can, but I would grant that. But to say that they've done that, they cannot go hunting, or they cannot, especially at this time when we have so much crime, I think people have a right to be able to defend their home and their family against crime. So I'm not going to, it's not an argument. I mean, we just feel differently about it. I mean, I don't think it's one of those right or wrong things. It's just that's the way that I feel. And so I think you're entitled to your view, and the federal law is, I guess, somewhere close to that. But I just don't agree.
What about a misdemeanor involving violence, then?
Well, if it's a misdemeanor, it's like you said. If it's a misdemeanor because it's less serious. If it's more serious, it's a felony. And if you're talking about somebody who commits a violent felony, then we can be in agreement.
Senator Springer.
Well, Madam Chair, I share the feelings, I think, of the Vice Chair. There's some parts of the state, whether we like it or not, barroom fights are kind of a fact of life, and that's an assault for, arguably. I'll lay my cards out on the table here. I don't quite feel the same commitment that the Vice Chair does. I guess if the Senate had been involved in this process from the get-go, then maybe there'd be an opportunity for us to feel a commitment to the end product. But this was sort of delivered as a fait accompli, only it's not accompli, it's far from it. Section 5 concerns me greatly. That's got to be out. I've got amendments that relate to assault weapons, which have been adopted in the state of California. That's got to be in as far as I'm concerned, and that's the extent of my commitment. So I just want to lay that on the table before we plan on staying here all night, because I don't plan on staying here all night.
I don't either.
I understand that.
Madam Chair, if we're calling for statements here, there are many elements of this bill that I can support coming from a district that is not too keen on gun control. But I just honestly think that this thing had the first subcommittee hearing just barely 9 weeks ago, and they delivered to us in the condition that it is, which I think is terminal. I mean, I'd love to do something in this area, but this is not the vehicle. And half in jest the other night, I sent you a note that said, let's either table this thing or make it a study. And that's where I am right now.
Appreciate your comments. I also appreciate these two folks for being willing to sit here and go through this. One, they're clearly not supportive and clearly not interested in doing anything, and I thank you for doing that. Okay. So we have two that are no votes, and we have Senator Hill that doesn't like misdemeanors in it at all. And you could probably count to three votes then on that basis, because I think you can take that message back, I guess, to the speaker that, you know, with respect to misdemeanors being in at all, you know, she could have three condescending votes to keep it in. But that's probably where we are. I mean, I don't know.
Is Senator Grinsky a no vote?
Yes. At least that's my discussion with him.
Yes.
Chair, if we want to have this bill in a forum, there are two things that are important. If the coalition had put this together, if they fly apart, then it's done anyway. And I'm trying to, and I respect the work that they've done, I would like to have the bill in the form that they have it and in the form that the speaker wants it to the degree that I can swallow it hard, and I will vote to get this bill out of committee. But I can say, I will say this, whether I would support it on the floor or not is unlikely.
Highly.
Okay. Well, I guess I'm not sure that adding misdemeanors would bring back any votes. I suppose if it made Vera happier with her bill, and that's what the people want to have in, you know, we could do it on the reduced list. But that's kind of where we are in this committee, and I guess I don't know how to resolve that part of it.
I'll support the amendment, but I'm still not going to vote for it.
Yeah.
Madam Chair, could I explore the related subject of the nonviolent felonies a bit? Because in some ways that troubles me more than the violent misdemeanors.
Okay.
And I'd be interested in the speaker's reasons why she believes that nonviolent felonies should be accompanied by a lifetime prohibition against owning any kind of a firearm.
That's, Madam Chair and Senator Shoemaker, it's practically speaking not a lifetime disability when you have the appeal process.
It's a 15-year disability.
And it's a 15-year. If she has no specific feelings on specific nonviolent felonies, it comes back to if you're a felon, you forfeit certain rights. And if you want to...
Well, why does she want to increase that forfeiture from the present handguns and short-barreled weapons to all firearms, whether or not the felony is a violent one? What is her reason for wanting to increase it?
Madam Chair and Senator Shoemaker, even if you have a violent felony, I believe you can still have under Oregon law a gun.
I've got no problem with a violent felony.
But then, what the approach was, how do you address that problem? We obviously don't want persons who are committed of violent felonies having any kind of firearm. But, and we came up with the solution. They're a felon, they go through an appeal process. Hey, it didn't have to do with firearms, didn't have to do with violence. Okay, you relieve the disability. That's the solution we came up with. It seems better than just anybody, regardless of the felony, has a long gun, which could include some assault weapons. And we're not glued to the specific language, but it does seem like something that should be addressed or a concern.
So what you're saying is that any other felon other than a violent one should go and show why they should be able to do that. And I guess the question I have is, well, I mean, you can argue both ways that this is there are some people who couldn't afford to get into court, who can't even get them into court to things like get out of their violent marriage or whatever all of that is. I mean, I assume that's where the thought process came from. Well, let's set the misdemeanor side piece of things away and go on. We're never going to get through here, and I don't want to go much. I know Dick wants to go, and I want to give you the promise that you can go if you want to, Dick.
Thank you.
And I appreciate your willingness to even be here at all.
Thank you.
And I would like to have us decide what we're going to do by 9 o'clock and at least some go through whatever and flag the unresolved and see if we can...
We probably ought to keep plowing along then because we've got other things in here we haven't dealt with yet.
Yeah. So we have, I will flag some of the major decision points that people want to talk about. Certainly the misdemeanors in and out. We have agreement that if we're going to have misdemeanors in at all, we're going to deal with Jack's list. It's okay, Jack? Go ahead, please.
I forgot where we were.
Well, we're
in Section 8.
We were at the top of section of 18,
okay.
Really finishing up on 5.
That was a...
We do our work carefully here, Corey. Figure out whether there's an or, make sure the or is not here, or our is here. Okay.
Section 18, Section 18 is the mandatory gun minimum. We, in keeping with the request from the committee, restored the language that provides a way for judges to give first-time offenders a break, basically. As present law says that you're subject to a mandatory minimum of 5 years, unless the court feels that that's inappropriate.
Okay, we just restored sub 5, is that all you did?
Yeah, that's
okay,
right.
Okay, and we didn't touch any of sub A in that. We had to
restore some other language just to make it consistent, Senator. For instance, on line 10, where it says except as provided. In sub 5.
Okay, but I'm talking about any policy changes. There are no policy changes.
Other than that one.
Just that one.
Okay.
Okay. Section. Section 21 has to do with prohibitions against carrying concealed knives. In the draft on line 18, I think there's a mistaken reference. ORS 166.260 is deleted. I think that's a mistake. That should be restored.
You're going to delete 290?
290 should be deleted because that statute is repealed.
Okay.
260 is the exceptions to the prohibitions so that police officers can carry slug shots and billy clubs and that kind of thing.
We made no changes from the B and Gross version.
Well, but that's what you said.
No, Senator.
We should have, huh?
You're right. That's just a mistake that was pointed out to me by...
today, since we met. Okay.
So that should...
Which comes out?
The reference to ORS 166.260.
Okay.
Otherwise, you'd prohibit police officers from carrying slug shots, whatever those are, something like a billy club.
Was that here? Was that in the original draft?
Yeah, it was in the original draft.
Okay. And the policeman didn't check this out? Where are the policemen in this audience? You fixed them. You prohibited them from their billy club. We're sorry. It does get a little rummy here after a while.
Section 23 is the statute that has to do with, it was intended, we had some extensive discussion about this the other night, it was intended to apply to folks that manufacture all these nasty weapons, short-barreled rifles and firearm silencers and that type of thing, or who import them or sell or transfer. We deleted the language of keeps...
Or possesses, that's addressed in a different statute, so I think that's consistent with the proponents.
Yeah, I recall, John, you were up on discussing that one last night, the other night.
It was interesting that as it came over from the existing statute, it proscribed exposing for sale, giving, and lending, but didn't proscribe selling.
That's correct, so we did insert selling, since that seemed to be...
What they were getting at.
That seemed to be the end of the
statute. They kept approaching it, but they never quite got it.
Okay.
We are going to get called in to the woodshed again.
Section 24 is the section that has to do with altering ID numbers and model and manufacturer numbers. You'll recall there a witness put into the legislative history that an identification number can include an ODL number. So we were concerned about the situation where you buy a gun and you want to take the old owner's driver's license off and put on yours. So we included the language for an unlawful purpose. So you're only guilty of this crime if you intentionally alter these marks or identification number if you do it for an unlawful purpose. Section 25, I don't think we did anything to that. I think there may be an amendment being proposed to take care of antique firearms or something. Section 26, again, we just did some cleanup. We inserted the language you see bolded, not more than 10 grains. This has to do with giving firecrackers to kids. The way the prohibition read, it looked like if it was 9 grains, it was okay. If it was 11 grains, it was okay. It was only 10 that was prohibited. Section 27, this is the racketeering statute that simply makes a statutory drafting change. Section 28 is... Section 28 is the same thing. It has to do with allowing police officers to keep their guns and badges when they retire. Section 29, this is the directive to the state police to do a study. I don't believe we made any changes to that.
Seemed to be quite well done, really.
Pardon me?
That seemed to be quite well done.
Okay, can we move on then?
Yeah. But I mean, that's...
Go.
I think that's a pretty substantial part of the bill, though.
I know, but yeah, right. We do need to go on quickly instead of too late.
The working group found that the bill from about this point on was in fact, as the senator said, quite well done. 30 was all right. It has to do with the reporting requirements. 31, duplicate and triplicate sheets. 32 is the appropriation clause. 33 is the jurisdictional stuff, giving the appropriate courts jurisdiction. That was okay. 34 is, I already said that. 35 is the same thing. 36. I don't think. Page 42, lines 14 and 15, this is another suggestion I received today. This is the language about the court can order a person be prohibited from purchasing a firearm because of the person's mental or psychological state, and I believe that there's a requirement that the person be committed first. At any rate, the language down on lines 14, you can deny a person the right to bear arms because of past pattern of behavior or participation in incidents involving violence. It seems appropriate to insert unlawful violence or threats of unlawful violence. or by reason of a single, okay, the present language is, or by reason of a single incident of extreme conduct. I have no idea what that means. We change that to read, or by reason of a single incident of extreme violent unlawful conduct. Extreme conduct standing alone.
Some of us getting extreme in this room right now.
So we changed that to extreme violent unlawful conduct, hoping that was, we correctly defined the intent. Section 37 is the study to issue a state identification card. Section.
I'm going to ask the KGB to work with us on that.
I would note, in all fairness, that down on line 30, it is voluntary. Section 38 is the preemption clause that we discussed the other night. And then the repealer, and that's it. There have been some other amendments that have been submitted. We have an amendment from the Oregon Psychiatric Association. We have Senator Springer's amendment. We have an amendment, B-21, that came to me from Legislative Council. I have no idea who this is from.
Okay, should we kind of, at least I want to dispense with the amendment tonight. Senator Springer's been here. I'd like to have him have a chance to present his, and then we can, I'd like to sort of vote on the amendments and then give Jack to go back and come back in tomorrow and see whether there are votes to pass up out a sort of cleaned up version of what Jack said, what we found tonight in terms of technical corrections or sensibility to be, okay?
Well, Madam Chair, I'll try to make this short, if not sweet. Mine are the Dash 20 amendments, and they're taken literally from the law that was passed and signed by the Governor of California, Governor Duke Majan, on May 24th. And I think we recall, unfortunately, the Patrick Purdy incident, which led to the outcry over assault weapons at the federal and state level. I think we also recall that Mr. Purdy, unfortunately, purchased that weapon in the state of Oregon and killed children in California with that. And to my mind, we haven't done the job unless we've addressed the question of assault weapons. And that's basically what the Dash 20 amendments do, and I would move those amendments.
Okay, Senator Springer has moved the Dash 20 amendments.
Madam Chair,
Actually, I guess we have to make it to, well, to the original bill, right? Is that what, whatever the
wherever, whatever council recommends, right.
Yeah. Yep. Sir Hill?
Well, I would assume that the working group brought this up. And I think as consistent with what I said before, I think this would just sort of blow the coalition apart. And that's, I would just say that that would be a reason why I wouldn't, although I certainly, personally, but that would be the reason. That's it, and just, I think we in effect kill the bill. And so, I guess in that respect,
Brockman's attention.
Yeah. At this point, you may want to include the minutes.
Well, Madam Chair, so I'm in a position of certainly respecting what Senator Springer's trying to do here, what Dick is trying to do, but I think it would just kind of render this whole thing kind of pointless. So I, for that reason, I just wouldn't support him. That's all I can.
Call for a vote.
Thanks, John.
Okay. Dick, do you have anything?
No, I think the issue is pretty clear. And I appreciate, you know, quote again, the efforts of the working group, but as I think I've indicated earlier, I don't think anybody from the Senate was invited to participate. I know I wasn't. I've been working on these subjects for a while, not as successfully apparently as the working group, but again, the state of California, the federal government, even our president has recognized assault weapons as a problem, and I think for us to ignore the issue just doesn't do the job.
Madam Chair, just a comment. This I think we had this discussion, although in a slightly different context, yesterday when we were talking about semi-automatic weapons. Those of these which are automatic weapons are in the prescribed group. Those of these which are short weapons are also. So I don't know how many of these are either short barrel, or are automatic. Those of these that are neither of those are semi-automatic, and a policy decision was made by the working group to not include semi-automatics in there. Again, I respect the what's behind this and that California and other states have done that, but I agree with Senator Hill that that's left alone within this.
Okay. Hello, please.
Brennan.
No.
Brockman.
Aye.
No.
Brennan.
Aye. Well, I would move the mental health or the McCauley amendments.
I think we should delete section 5.
That deletes section 5.
Mm-hmm. The registry. And these amendments probably speak to the gross bill, not the draft amendments. But I think we understand that.
Oh, absolutely. Senator Schmidt.
Where does Senate Bill 412 stand?
Senate Bill 412 stands in jeopardy.
Well, still in the conference committee? Yes. So it's unlikely to pass anyway. If we strike paragraph 5 from this, will it improve the chances of it passing, or do you think it's irrelevant?
Oh, I don't think it's irrelevant.
I guess one of the operative questions, if I may, Madam Chair, yes, since it related back to my earlier motion and earlier amendment, is how critical is this registry to the working group or to the sponsor of the bill?
So we need to find that out. I don't know if we need to find it right now, but well, come on up, if you know. We do need to find out. Come on up, Corey. Excuse me. I know the answer. I'm sorry. Sometimes I don't like to find the answers either, like all of us.
Madam Chair and Senator Springer, I don't know exactly how to put this, but it would just be, ever since the bill or the whole idea has been introduced, it's gone nothing but farther into the form it is now, which is something the Speaker's office gave. That would just be one more reason, in addition to many of the things, the reduction of penalties for various aspects that have been brought up today, tonight, would definitely weaken our support for the bill. I don't know as far as if it would disband the working group. I think the main concern would be the Speaker's office on that end of the working group.
Yeah, I think you need to talk to very directly.
Yeah.
I mean, that's also something that's relatively simple to do in terms of Jack's amendment changes. I mean, it's not as if we can't. I mean, it's no problem tomorrow morning or whatever, we'd finally do this, to either leave it in or cross it out. It is a problem to try to work out some of these other details if we're going to start asking people to sort of figure out what is a violent felony. I mean, that's a lot more work from Jack than making the policy decision on in or out of Chapter 5. Come on up, John.
John Nichols, Oregon State Rifle and Pistol Association. Madam Chair, from the beginning, the working group's goal was to attempt to filter out of the system the walking time bombs like the Patrick Purdy's. I don't think anybody on the working group has wedded any particular language. It's just we want to be able to identify these people and get them if some mechanism can be devised, some language that would be better than the registry. I don't think anybody would object. It's just that was our goal from the beginning.
Just to get the folks who are prone to violence and shouldn't have guns.
That is correct, Madam Chair. In the case of Mr. Purdy, since he was the genesis of a lot of these things, like the assault rifle, assault weapon bans, and this bill, and the registry, the individual was arrested on 7 serious felony charges, allowed to plead guilty by the state of California to misdemeanors, and turned loose on probation. He was drawing almost $800 a month from the Social Security Administration as a violent individual who was incapable, they felt, of holding a job. He was adjudged mentally incompetent by a county, I believe it was a jail psychiatrist, and was under court-ordered treatment, but he kept slipping through the cracks, and that was our attempt, and that is our attempt, and that's our goal.
It's well, I suppose they come under felonies anyway, because people who are evaluated as they come into the jail system as being mentally ill do have some of those tags. But I guess they would already be included because they would be tagged in with the felony. Just trying to figure out another way we can do it rather than rely on the concerns that people have now with Section 5 is that you're bringing in judgments of sort of clinical social worker types who are, you know, to make judgments on whether they think people are violent, which, and they may not know at that point. I guess you'll have to do some education to find out, to have them make an extra determination to know that this person should not have a firearm. I guess the only thing I have in terms of just linking it with 412, frankly, is that 412, well, I guess maybe I'm wrong. I just need to go again and reread the whole thing in 412 and figure out what type of people we're actually bringing in here and who's making the judgments on them and who's required to report and that sort of thing.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
Not that it's probably any comfort to the committee, but I think that this particular question absorbed more time of the working group and more time of the Judiciary Subcommittee than any other issue in the bill. And the product is obviously imperfect.
It's useful thing. Senator Shoemaker.
Madam Chair, my feeling on this is that shortened to 1 year, as we are proposing, that this on balance is worth keeping in the bill, because it will pick up some people who expose a threat to a particular person or group in a situation where you're not able to, you may not seek to commit the person right away, and you don't have any crime that's been committed.
Okay.
So it gives you a chance to get onto a registry, which is a computer program that is protected from disclosure. You don't even disclose it to the person who is in a position to sell a gun to the person. You just give him the information. That's the extent of disclosure from that, and it only stays on that program for 1 year. My thought there is that if the person is prone to violent behavior, in a general sense, something else is going to happen during that year that will get him into some other category. He'll get convicted of a crime, or he'll have a hearing that will judge him mentally unstable, and an order will be put out that he should not be allowed to have weapons.
Does this then throw that person into an A misdemeanor condition if they happen to have a weapon already?
No.
I'd like to make that clear, because you're going to have those people who...
What's our possession section, Jack?
13.
But again, I don't want to have people who are, you know, sort of back bootstrapping him into crimes that they don't even know, that by virtue of the fact that we just sit here in Salem and somebody, some clinical social worker or somebody they go to for counseling reports them on the list, and all of a sudden...
And then they're notified that they've been put on the list and they've got a weapon.
No, they're not on the list. They're not on the list of unlawful possession.
So they're only, they can't buy. Is that what that...
They can't buy.
And a person can't sell to them.
Right.
Okay, so it does not, if they have, doesn't prohibit them from being, if they have a hunting rifle, they would still be allowed to have one, to, this would, it would stop them from purchasing
for a year.
Excuse
me, technical point. Does purchase apply to ammunition?
No, I don't believe so.
So a person could still, even if on this list...
The trouble is with ammunition, you can just buy it off the shelf at G.I. Joe's.
Yeah, you can't.
There's no, I don't think there's any attempt to control that. That would be a whole new...
There's only regulations concerning purchase of handgun ammunition. There is still a criminal penalty, I believe, for selling to a person on this list, though.
Well, but the sellers are still going to have to call some list, some master list, right? And so I guess I'm not sure that that's any different than anybody else on that list. Now, I'm not concerned about the sellers. I am concerned about getting the people in, you know, inadvertently into a misdemeanor situation where, for possession, and I'd like Jack to clear that up and see where we are with it.
Well, it's no question, they're not.
Okay, they're not.
They're not included.
It's just a question of selling, okay? I guess I think if it makes that much difference, I'd leave it in for now. And we cut it to a year, and no, we're not gonna.
Well, Madam Chair, I'll withdraw my motion.
I don't think we have support to do that, but I do. It is helpful for me to clarify that we're not going to get them in possession, because that was that's the part that really truly threw me off the wagon on that particular section.
Just trying to protect against that person after he's made a threat.
To go by.
Going out, getting a weapon.
Yeah. Okay. What else? Thank you. Jack, are there other amendments?
We have the amendments submitted by the City of Portland are incorporated into the bill. We discussed those the other night.
They're in the bill. They're in this?
Yes. And that's on page 4. And I may not, I think I pointed that out when we went through it the first time. That's page 4, sub 4. I may not have been clear to the committee that that was one of the amendments that was submitted the other night.
Okay.
And then we still have well.
What? Okay. Does anybody have a problem with including those?
Sorry.
It's sub 4, page 4 in your amendments, Senator Shoemaker.
On
line 13, huh?
I was just telling John he'll like it.
Yeah.
Oh, that. Well, yeah, that's within these dashes.
I know, but it's an inclusion that Jack is calling our attention to, that it is the City of Portland's request dealing with liability.
Yeah, no, I haven't.
Anything else, Jack, that you have in your...
We've got some B-21 amendments. I don't know who they're from. We got them just before the hearing item. I haven't quite figured out what they do yet either.
Does anybody know out there who's responsible for the B-21 amendments? Hearing none, so... They're not adopted.
They're not mine.
Maybe it's the harassment bill.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
I
conflict amendments.
Yeah, that's what they are. They're conflict amendments.
We're going to deal with this now. I have another point that I'll complete.
Oh, you know what that is? That's the drive-by shooting bill 2513. It is a conflict amendment.
Oh, that's right. Okay.
Okay.
All right. So...
Yeah, we ought to include those. Are there objections to getting those in?
Well, Madam Chair, then I'd move the Dash B 21 amendment.
Okay. We haven't really moved even the B 19s yet.
We moved this into the B 19. That's appropriate.
What?
And we move them into the B 19.
I don't think so.
We can hold them in reserve.
Okay. Anything else?
Madam Chair?
Yes?
I went through this sort of as a scrivener.
Yeah. Okay, and I want to say something to the folks who offered yet another amendment to these with IDs and that kind of thing. And I want to say to you that I don't think we're prepared to embark on yet another addition beyond sort of what we've done here. And I want to say I want to thank you for your interest, but I really don't think we can get into some of those broader questions that have been, I think, discussed there. And if they haven't, this committee is not in a position to do. We're trying to just sort of manage what we have in front of us here and try not to get too far off into the new areas. Thank you. Senator Winker.
I went through this draft today after I received it to give it another reading. As I always do, found a number of things, none of substance.
Okay. Well, I guess...
Sort of further cleanup, and I'd like to give these to Jack with a suggestion that he use his own good judgment.
I want to stop you. What other major issues are here to be resolved, Jack, in the B-19? Should we decide to adopt the B-19 amendments with a proviso that we go back and rework them in the morning with non-technical kinds of changes that either Jack would find or
Bob would
find.
I'd say they're technical changes, but they're not substantive changes.
Right, that's
they're
what I'm talking
corrections.
About.
Corrections.
That's what I'm talking about. Non-policy questions. If that were the case, I'd like to, you know, I want to go through and adopt the B-19 I'll call it in concept form, and then have you clean it up and then meet one final time in the morning so people can flag some other things and get back to Jack with any kind of technical changes that you find between now and early morning so that Jack can...
Now and early morning.
Well, I mean, people who have an interest in this bill who are following it for months and months and months, certainly, I expect that they can go home and read it for another hour or so and find things up they've been reading, right? I mean, some of us will have to do that yet tonight on a bunch of issues, not necessarily this one.